Welcome to Hype, episode 137. My name is Selena, and I'm joined by Pam this week for another entertaining show. That's not what I meant to say. For another show about this week's entertaining news stories. We hope the show is entertaining too, of course, but we won't know until we do it. So
I feel like we're already off to a good start.
Yeah. Entertaining ourselves at any rate.
But are you not entertained?
Yeah. She says calmly,
yes,
glancing around at the crowd.
That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm glancing around at my wall. At nothing. Yeah. I mean, there are people on my wall. Like, there, I have photos on my wall. So.
Your wall has ears, and they are listening to
you. Actually, my brother's on the other side of this wall, so he might be listening. It's a weird night, you guys. It's going to be fine.
We're already entertaining Pam's brother. That's a good start. So, anyway... Moving swiftly along, if you too are entertained, or if you're not, we would love to hear about it, preferably the former, but we are flexible. You can, if you have any feedback for us about this show or anything you want us to talk about in the future, you can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. You can find us on hypeable.com, which is hypable.com. And if you are so inclined, please head over to our Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast, where we, you know, you can read more about the bonus features that we offer. You can consider pledging to us. Is that the word, pledging? I think so. It might not be. But anyway, you can become a patron and you can get some cool extra bonus stuff. And you can give us a little bit of help with the hosting and supporting the show and all the kind of stuff that we, you know, need a little bit of help with if you want to. And if you don't, totally fine. No obligation. This show will always be free. If you are a patron... One of the things that we do offer is a chance to weigh in on a special Patreon bonus segment topic that we will be getting to a little bit later in the show. So this week for our Patreon bonus discussion, which will be available to our supporters at all levels, we are going to be extending our discussion a little bit of one of the news stories, which is, you know, you guys guessed it, it's the Gilmore Girls one, because we have a lot of thoughts and feelings, and we're going to talk a little bit about it in the show. Right now, people are like, the Gilmore Girls one? Selena, you haven't explained it. Don't worry, we will. But we will be getting to that a little bit later in the show, and then if you want to hear more of me and Pam, theorizing and discussing and debating the pros and cons of there potentially being more Gilmore Girls, then you can head on over to patreon.com and subscribe with as little as like $2 a month, and then you can listen to that if you want to. So the first thing we do, as always, is how we hype, where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. And Pam, I've just been speaking a lot, so why don't you go first?
Okay, so there's a lot of new music that came out this week, you guys. Of course, I'm really excited about that. Some of it we're going to discuss in the main show, so I'm going to focus my music portion of How We Hype on Ed Sheeran, because, oh my god, Ed Sheeran is back. Divide is officially out, and it's really good. I think that I'm not sure what I was expecting when it came to Divide, but I know, like, I feel like Ed hyped it up so much that I wasn't even expecting what we got, not in a bad way, but like, I really think that this album at its core really showcases his journey to re-self-discovery, because he took a year off from like everything, and then all of a sudden came back on New Year's Day, like 12:01 a.m. He's on Instagram and Twitter being like, new music soon, and everyone's like, oh my god, like literally to the year he's back. And I feel like Divide really delves into a lot of that. Like, there's even like some, he did a lot of traveling, there's a little bit of like international influence in his album. A couple of the tracks are infused with kind of like some worldly sounds, which is really cool. And I don't think you've had a chance to listen, correct?
No.
Okay. It's very good. Highly recommend. I really think that this is his Something for Everyone album. I honestly feel like, regardless of whether you're a fan of like old school Sheeran or you just prefer like his penchant for creating and crafting like top 40 hits, like you will find something on here that you like. I'm looking at the album list right now, so I'm stalling a little bit. I wanted to pull up the track list so I could give you guys my favorite tracks. This is, like, in no particular order. Like, on first listen, I really love Eraser, which is, like, the perfect opening first album. It really kind of gives you a feel for, like, where Ed's been and, like, and where he is right now, which is really cool. He's always been really good about kind of, like, really just being honest about, like, his situation and stuff like that. And I feel like it's a great first opener. I love Dive, Perfect, Galway Girl. What else do I like? Oh, Supermarket Flowers and Barcelona. Those are, like, my favorite tracks. And I will say that I feel like Dive is the best song off the album. Ed will tell you that it's Perfect, and Perfect is kind of like his, like, divides Thinking Out Loud, and it's actually really impressive because it's the only track on the album that he is, like, solely credited for crafting. So that's amazing in and of itself, because these days it's very uncommon to see, like, even musicians that are, like, so multifaceted that do so much for, like, themselves. Like, you know, Ed obviously is a composer and he's a lyricist. Like, Perfect, like, has no other co-writers, no other anything like that. So I understand why he feels like it's this album's magnum opus, but I feel like everything about Dive is perfectly executed. It's incredibly vulnerable. It's so beautiful. So if you only listen to one song, listen to Dive, because it's just, it's perfect. It left me speechless. That's all I have to say about that.
That's amazing.
That's my very, very long Ed Sheeran rant.
Ed Sheeran hype. Sheeran hype.
But yeah, Sheeran hype. Yay, Sheerios. Let me know if you've listened to this album, by the way, and tweet at me or, like, send in some feedback and let me know what your favorite songs were. We have a feature going up this week on Hypeable, where me and our fellow staffer Jen kind of go through some of our favorite lyrics off of the album. So if you're interested in more of, like, a deep dive into Divide, keep an eye out for that. Other than that, I also saw Logan over the weekend, and I'm really bummed that Marima's not here, because I saw she tweeted about how much she liked it, which is, like, I guess amazing, since she's not a huge Logan fan, even though she's an X-Men fan. This movie is so, so good. I completely forgot it was rated R, by the way, but I feel like it really fit the movie and the subject matter, and they really didn't hold back on any of the punches. It's just, like, such a beautifully crafted film, and the character development was really, really great. Laura is amazing. She's the new character, also known as X-23, and it was just, like, this movie was so, so good. If you haven't seen it yet, I highly recommend going out to see it. Even if you're a casual fan of X-Men like I am, I feel like you'll still really enjoy this.
Oh, I'm so excited to see Logan. I haven't, it's out here, but I haven't had a chance to go yet, and God, it looks so good. And, like, I don't know if you haven't played The Last of Us, but, like, I know that Logan, you know, the comics came first with X-23, whatever her number was, but it's that similar of, like, a gritty old man and a murderous little girl, you know, escaping bad guys is like similar, and I loved it in The Last of Us, so that's, like, the first thing I think of, because I'm a heathen and I don't know anything about comics.
Okay. I'm a little bit of a heathen too then.
But anyway, all that to say is I'm really mm-hmm. excited to see.
Yeah, we went as, like, a big little group, and also with Yuki, who designed our cool, awesome banner, who, like, if you haven't seen our banner, it's, like, everywhere we could possibly put it. We're so in love with it. And she came out of that movie being, like, Laura/X-23, like, she's my new spirit animal. She's so amazing, and specifically that relationship between her and Logan, the way that it progresses on screen is just utterly beautiful. So yeah, it's very good. Oh, also, cool. Professor Xavier is, like, amazing in this too. Like, everything is about this movie I really enjoyed. So
That's awesome. That's a high recommendation. I've been hearing good things. So I actually have two Howie hypes this week. I thought I only had one, but I just remembered I wanted to shout this out. Speaking of comics, I have to shout out to Margaret Stoll, who it was really random. She was, like, on Twitter, like, "Ooh, does anyone want a signed comic?" And I was like, I do. So she sent me a signed comic of a Mighty Captain Marvel #1, and which is the comic book that she's doing. She's a young adult author, but she did this comic for Marvel. And, like, guys, this is, like, I obviously have read comics before, but this is the first one that I've read in a long time, sort of catching up. And people have told me that I need to start reading Captain Marvel comic, so this thought like a good place to start. It's a brand new comic book series, and Margaret Stoll is the writer, and it launched January 18th with the first issue, and it's really good. Like, it's the drawings are amazing, and it's really cool. It starts off with Captain Marvel. They're shooting a commercial, and like some other girl is playing Captain Marvel, and then she like they're refugees, and it's very apropos and very real life reflective, and she has to save a refugee, and you know, it's just setting up the story because it's just the first issue, but I'm intrigued and I'm into it. So I highly recommend Mighty Captain Marvel that I randomly got my hands on, and very, very, very cool. I love, because through The 100 too, I was able to interview Julie and Shauna Benson, who actually worked on a Birds of Prey, or work, they still do, work in a Birds of Prey comic book series. So I got an issue of that, and I read that too over the summer after Comic-Con. And I loved it too. Like, comic books are, I know that I'm like speaking to the converted, but it's like, you know, a whole new world for me. But it's such a good way of finding kick-ass female characters. And I feel like there are some amazing female writers just doing awesome things in that business right now. And I've always been like, I've felt a little bit guilty about not being as into it as I feel like I should be. So hopefully this is the start of a new era of Selena comic book nerd. I can't wait.
Yeah. Margaret Stoll's name sounded really familiar, and I was trying to figure out why, so I was googling her while you were chatting, and she does the Beautiful Creature series, so that's that was my touchstone. I was like, why does that name sound familiar? So that's really cool that she's doing comic books and stuff like that now too.
It's getting into it. I think she did the Black Widow book as well.
Oh right, that's the other one I was going to ask you about. Everybody really loved that, so
Yeah. So that was my first Howie Hype. And my second Howie Hype, if you've been following me on Twitter, I'm sure you know. No, it's not The 100, guys. I already slipped one mention in there, but that's not actually my hype this week. My hype this week is my belated birthday present, the Nintendo Switch. It was going to be my hype anyway, but I do want to shout out to Mariah Lovegood, who asked me to review the Switch on Hype, because she said, I love Zelda, but I don't know if a Switch is worth it. So a little background, like the Nintendo Switch is the new console / handheld gaming device from Nintendo. It follows the Wii U, which was the latest console in their line of consoles. And the reason that, because the new Zelda game that came out for it is Zelda Breath of the Wild. I'm a huge Zelda fan. I've that's always been my favorite game series. And obviously I wanted this game and I wanted to play it. And usually I play games, as you guys know, when I edit the show, I usually play some kind of video game, and I do that on my brother's consoles because I don't really have any, but my brother is more into PlayStation. So he had a Wii, but he doesn't have a Wii U. So I was like, okay, well, if, you know, I'm going to play this, then I have to get my own console. And the Switch, I'm not a handheld gamer person, so the handheld part of it didn't appeal to me at all. But the console, and at one point, like, me and my brother are not going to, like, share an apartment. Maybe we just will forever. Who knows? But I thought it was a good thing to ask for my birthday, which was in February, so I had to wait for it to come out, and luckily my family got it for me, and I assumed that I was basically just going to use it as a console to play Zelda and maybe Mario when that came out, because I do love that too. And I have cousins as well, like little cousins, so it's always, Nintendo games are good for kids too, because they do a little bit more entertaining kid-friendly games too. Anyway, so I got the console, the day before yesterday, and I've been playing Zelda pretty much nonstop. And I guess I'll start by just reviewing the console itself a little bit, and then I will speak. I just have to ask first, have you had a chance to play on the Switch?
No, nobody I know has one, but we're like, my brother and I are talking about this. We're like, maybe we should go halvesies because it's not that expensive, and I really want to play Zelda, and Mario Kart's coming back out. So, like, this is everything that we love. So, we'll see. It's possible we'll have one soon.
Maybe my review will help you make up your mind. But yeah, because, and that's the thing, like, obviously gaming consoles are expensive in general, and I know it's more expensive in some parts of the world, but here at least it's not that expensive. Like, you know, it's about half the price of the PlayStation when it first came out. So it's like, it's pretty affordable in that way. And so anyway, my experience with the Switch, I hooked it up to the TV. It worked fine. No problem. The little Joy-Con things, like, you can attach them to a thing. So it's like a really awkward square controller that you get, basically. But you get used to it in no time. I feel like I'd have to double check this, but I feel like the B and A buttons are inverted from what it is on, like, a GameCube console, which is, like, very confusing for me, so I'm, like, still not completely used to it. But it plays just fine. The image quality, the sound quality, sometimes it has a little bit of a hum. Like, actually, the fan noise on the Switch got really loud. It gets really loud when you first turn it on, and it's loud for a couple of minutes, and then the noise goes completely away. So that's, like, a thing to be a little bit concerned about. Like, if you're trying to play it, like, on the DL, then you might want to, like, hide for the first couple of minutes, and then it's fine. So that's all fine. That works like a console, and it works perfectly fine. And then the thing that for me was sort of a surprise was that, as I said, I'm not a fan of handheld gaming. You know, it's and I was thinking, like, when you have a game as graphically rich as the Zelda game, like, I wouldn't want to play that on a small screen. Like, I'm thinking about, you know, the whatever that's called, the new DS. Like, I hate that. You have to use the little stick thing, and, like, it's too small, and I hate that. So I was expecting it to only use it as a console, but actually I tried it on handheld, and it was, there's something, and I know Andrew agrees with this too because he has one, there's something, it's the screen size is ideal for me. Like, it's, I forget that I'm playing on handheld, which is exactly the way it should be. Like, the graphics are still amazing. I don't feel like anything is too small, so I can't make out what it is. Like, I can play, I think the battery with Wi-Fi lasts for just like a couple of hours, like 3 hours or something, which isn't that long. But I was playing for that time, and I didn't, you know, my eyes didn't hurt. I didn't have any problems. I didn't, like, it was, and that was such a surprise to me because I wasn't expecting to enjoy that part. So that's, like, made the Switch, like, double worth it. So I'm a big fan of both of those options. And then the game itself, I mean, Zelda, it's hard because I've only just started playing, well, that's not true, but I've been playing for a long time, but I've only actually just gotten into the real game because, I mean, I'm sure you know this, Pam, too, that when they launched, they were like, this is a huge world, huge Zelda, like, so much you can do, la 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 la. So I get into it, I look at the map, I'm like, oh yeah, that's a pretty big world, and I'm like running around, I'm like, okay, yeah, so I think it's a little bit bigger than Ocarina, I see what they meant, and I'm like, I run around and I do the things, and there's a thing in the new Zelda game where you can craft potions and food and stuff. It's like gathering ingredients and making the food. And there are no people. There are no rupees. I'm super disappointed because I'm like, oh, well, I'm going to miss, like, buying stuff. And, like, there are no cities or anything. I'm just, like, a lonely Link running around in this world. And I'm like, I'm there and I'm exploring everything. And I'm like, so I spend, like, way too long on that before I realize that I'm basically in, like, the tutorial area of the game.
That's amazing.
So, like, there is stuff to do. Like, there are missions, and I did those missions, but it took me so long because I couldn't. You have to find certain like shrines. You have to collect a number of shrine things before you can advance and get the thing that would take you over the cliff into the real game. So I, like, couldn't find the last one. So I was like, okay, that's fine. It's, you know, whatever. Like, I can explore this big, amazing area. So I'm dumb, but the game is good, and now I'm in the real game, and I just caught myself a horse, and it's not a Epona, because you apparently have to have some kind of amiibo thing to get an Epona. I don't know what that is. I'm still a newbie to this stuff. But yeah, no, it's a huge, like, it is legitimately, it's a huge world, and I got my horse, and I went to Kakariko, apparently. Like, there's speech in this game, so you learn how to properly pronounce stuff. It's Hyrule, by the way. I know you were all wondering. And like, you know, I'm buying stuff. And there's really cool outfits that you can get. And there's, like, the weapon system. Like, the weapons break, so you have to, like, keep getting new ones from enemies, which is a little bit annoying at first, but actually you get used to it fairly quickly. So that's just, like, another mechanism that you know, is a little bit different. And I love it. Like, guys, I joked that you were never gonna hear or see me again after I got my hands on this game. And, like, I've only just, like, come out of my hole to record this podcast. So I love Zelda. I love this. So basically, I'm so sorry that was so long, but I felt like I wanted to give it a little bit of a proper attention. Do you have any questions for me? Was there anything that you would want to know before you bought it?
No, I mean, I've been hearing, like only good things, but it's different when you hear from somebody you actually know, because I trust your opinion more than I trust, like, other people's opinions, you know? Yeah. But, like, so did you just get Zelda? Did you get any other games? Like, what do you feel like?
Oh, I just got Zelda. Like, okay. Zelda is, like, half it's the, like, price of the console. Yeah,
I was gonna say, like, the games are pretty expensive. I know, yeah. Like, the big one is, like, the one that they're really marketing is that 1-2 Switch game where you, like, you're just looking at your opponent and not at the screen and stuff like that. So I guess that's kind of cool because they're trying to get people to interact, which is kind of nice, yeah. Because a lot of video game play, like, you're only interacting through the screen. So it's kind of cool that they're kind of trying to urge social interaction more than anything. But I feel like Nintendo's really good about that, because even, like, the Wii and stuff like that, a lot of it was
Pokemon Go.
You can play as,
like,
a family.
Kind of their,
So that's kind of cool. But I feel like we're going to break down and do it. I think we're going to bite the bullet and just get it, because it sounds, everybody has been loving it so far. And
you should.
And I want to play.
Yeah, for sure. It's worth it. Like, even, and I know this sounds so dumb, but, like, it's worth it for Zelda, you know, because it's a huge game. It's going to entertain you for, like, ages. And eventually, even if none of the launch titles are, like, your cup of tea, like, eventually there's going to be something else out. There's going to be the Mario out. There's going to be Mario Kart. And, like, as a console, just as a next-gen console, I feel like it works. It gets the job done. You know, like, it's obviously they have different priorities than something like Sony, who just released their, like, ultra HD PlayStation. And if you're, like, really, really into graphics, you're not going to be playing on consoles anyway. So it's like, you know, if you like Nintendo and if you like the games that they offer and if you enjoy the idea of having a game on your console that you can then, on your TV, that you can pick up and continue on the go, and that mechanism works exactly as it should, then this is for you, and you should consider, if you are in the market for a console, you should consider it, I would definitely say. If the listeners have any other questions for me, then you can send them in, and I'll try to answer them next show, or I can just answer them on Twitter, because I know that this is a huge thing. Like, if you don't happen to have a birthday coming up and family don't know what else to get you, then it's definitely a consideration that you might need some help deciding. And I'll have some more features tested for next week too, when I get out of my honeymoon phase with Zelda. So anyway, let's head on into the news. We have a couple of big stories to talk about. I'm just going to continue on here with our first story in the doc, which is we're going to do a bunch of... Actually, we have a bunch of trailers to talk about for movies, and then some more movie news, and then a little bit of TV and a little bit of music. So that's how it's... So Pam basically finishes off the news segment this week. The first story we're going to talk about is Deadpool's new trailer, the first trailer for Deadpool 2, which plays in front of Logan. So if you've gone to see that, you will have seen it on the big screen. The trailer is really cool. It's basically, I almost don't want to call it a trailer, because it is basically like a clip from the movie. I don't know if it's going to be in the movie or if it was just a teaser thing. I guess we'll have to wait and see. It features Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool, who's walking down the street. He sees a man getting robbed, and being the best, his best Superman self, he dives into a phone booth to put on his costume and save the man. Unfortunately, because this is, you know, real life, and Deadpool is Deadpool, it takes him too long with his ass pressed against the glass. to put on this costume. And unfortunately, well, you can see the trailer for yourself. Anyway, it's very on brand. It's very Deadpool. It's hilarious and sardonic and dark and R-rated. And I'm so into it. What did you think?
So I heard that this was going to play before Logan, but I thought, like you, I thought it was going to be like a teaser trailer. I didn't really know what to expect. I'm really glad that I didn't like catch wind of what exactly it was, because it was so much more fun to be surprised in the theater. But you're right, it does play more like a Marvel extended scene, or like, you know, a, like after credits scene, than anything else.
Yeah, and, yeah. I don't think and it's it was part just, of the movie.
Yeah, we literally like got to the end of the trailers and I was like, what? I'm getting cheated out of the Deadpool thing. And all of a sudden you hear Angel of the Morning and you're like, oh my God, it's happening. So that was really fun. And there's a lot of like with Deadpool in general, there's a lot of little like nods to this and that. So like, it's really funny because all of this is taking place outside of a theater, which is playing Logan. Yeah. So it was even funnier because like you're at a movie theater to see Logan, if you're like me and you're experiencing it that way. But yeah, you're right. Just definitely like on brand, everything you kind of want from Ryan Reynolds really has like his finger on the pulse of what Deadpool really is. And it just, I feel like anything that he puts out, people just get excited for, because he knows this character so well. So he knows what fans want to see. And I don't see how the sequel will be anything less than awesome, because he just knows the character inside and out.
Yeah, and it's a good start too, because like they had a bit of a director shakeup, and I'm sure that whenever that happens, because we lost Tim Miller, the director of Deadpool 1, you're like, well, where is the magic? Was it in Ryan Reynolds? Was it in Tim Miller? Was it in the creative partnership of them? But I mean, obviously this is just a teaser, we have no idea, but it seems I'm delighted by this, and it's just getting me very excited for the sequel. Sort of a little bit related to this, we also have a bit of, it's a kind of a non-news story, but it's kind of cool. It's a Stranger Things is David Harbour, also known from Winona Ryder's facial expressions, is apparently testing to play Cable, which is, if you know how he looks and if you've seen pictures of him, like that is ridiculously perfect casting. Cable is obviously Deadpool's like friend/enemy/frenemy, who we learned in a post-credit scene for the first movie would be appearing in the sequel. So I'm into this. I would love this. I think he's great. He's done a lot of stuff, David Harbour, and you know, he's funny too. Like he's got range, and he looks the part. So we'll see.
So we have another trailer for Pirates of the Caribbean 5 that came out this week. I'm actually shocked that we're getting such an influx of trailers, but I don't exactly hate it, because I feel like, I think that everybody started out hearing about Pirates 5 thinking like, do we really need another one? Like, is this really going to excite audiences? But this new trailer might be the key to making you feel like you should maybe go out and see this movie. It really excited me. I know it excited a couple of different people. It really kind of delves a little bit more into the plot and how Captain Salazar, who's played by Javier Bardem, like what he's got against Jack Sparrow. They have a torrid history. It looks like we're going to get some flashback scenes in there, which is really exciting. We get a great look at K.S. Scodelario's character, who is Karina, and a little bit more of Brendan Thwaite's Henry, who everybody's speculating to be the love child of Will. And oh my God, I just forgot her name. You know who I'm talking
Elizabeth.
About. Elizabeth, yeah, Will and Elizabeth. It just seems like really, really fun. There's just enough Captain Jack in this, like, to not make you feel, like, overdosed by Johnny Depp and stuff like that. But I feel like this is going to be really fun. I'm really excited to see this in May. I have a friend who is obsessed with Pirates of the Caribbean, and she actually made a really interesting point, which is that Disney has released a few, like a few authors have taken on the idea of young Jack Sparrow on behalf of Disney and have released books about like his adventures in his younger years. And so she was saying that there might be some clues in books like The Price of Freedom, which is technically considered Pirates canon, kind of like Star Wars, like George Lucas opened up his world to people so that they could write about the Star Wars universe and the Star Wars universe, and that's all technically considered Star Wars canon in a way.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if any of our listeners have read any of these, like, young Jack Sparrow books, but if you have and you've seen this trailer, we'd love to hear from you to see if you can, like, make any connections and stuff like that, because she's waiting until, like, April, May to pick up some of the ones that she's been collecting to, like, you know, get hyped for the movie, to, like, read some of these books and stuff like that. But I did think that that was a very interesting point, that we might have some breadcrumbs if you're looking to kind of piece together this stuff or, like, make your own theories and stuff like that. You might want to look into some of these young Jack Sparrow books, like The Price of Freedom by A.C. Crispin. Ann C. Crispin is the name of the author of that one. That one came out, I think, like, last year or 2 years ago. So, yeah.
You know what I like about this trailer is that we've talked about this before, but I liked the first one. I thought the first movie, Pirates, was so good, so entertaining, so much fun. And then the second and the third one were just too long, convoluted, confusing, weird. And then I stopped watching after that because I was like, okay, I'm done, and I'm, you know, Johnny Depp, whatever. But this one, I mean, it seems like such a cliche, but it feels like it really sort of goes back to its roots. You know, you have the central constellation of Jack Sparrow with a guy who looks exactly like Will Turner and a girl who looks exactly like Elizabeth. And you know, you just, it looks fun. You know, I feel like the second and third Pirates movie, they suffered from trying to be too serious, and they suffered from trying to be too epic, and they suffered from trying to be too many things at once. And this one just sort of, you know, it's obviously just a trailer, but I would be intrigued to see it because I feel like the characters are interesting to me, and it just looks like a fun pirate movie, you know, a little bit Narnia-esque in its aesthetic, which I think is okay. Whereas the second and third one were just grim and dark and gray and black, and, you know, it was too much. But this one looks bright and shiny with a little bit of darkness, of course. But it looked cool. Would you agree?
Yeah, you're right. You know, I didn't think about, like, the literal, like, color semantics, but you're right. Yeah. It does kind of feel like not necessarily a reboot. I mean, it is kind of called the Final Adventure or the Final... What's it? Like, they changed it because it used to be called something else, and now it's called... Let me pull this up. Dead Men Tell No Tales?
Yes.
Yeah.
It is. That's the one.
So,
that's the name.
Yeah, so it's interesting that they've changed that to from, like, I think it was, like, Salazar's Revenge or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I feel like you're right. I feel like it did kind of, like, breathe new life into it. I think that it's nice to see them, like, of course, all of the movies kind of focus around Jack, but this one kind of feels like they're less about introducing new frontiers and, like, new characters so much as, like, bringing it back into the core value of, like, just, like, a buddy adventure trio. Yeah. Not rom-com, but, like, a trio, like, adventure. So, right. I'm down for this. I think that hopefully that's what it ends up being, because it would be sad if it ended up being a little crazier, or, you know.
Mm.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have to see in May.
We'll see. We will see. Yes, we will. And the other things we'll see in May include, I don't know what that noise was, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which also had a new trailer out. This is, I mean, everything we've seen from Guardians of the Galaxy 2 has me excited. Like, I'm so ready for this movie. I loved the first one. Apparently, there's, like, some late hate for the first one. Like, suddenly I'm talking to people and they're like, oh, yeah, I just didn't get Guardians of the Galaxy. And I'm like, boom, boom. How dare you? And then I'm like, okay, well, that's fine, but I like it, so whatever. And I take back my booms. But so the new trailer looks as awesome as anything we've seen before, maybe even more awesome, because it's more, there's more fun, there's more color, I'm just basically seduced by color, guys. That's what you can take away from this hype. And there's a little bit of a reveal, which is that Star-Lord's father, we already knew Star-Lord's father was going to be in it, he's played by Kurt Russell, and we actually get an interesting introduction to him. It turns out that his dad is a sentient planet called Ego, so yeah. This is like some Hagrid stuff going on, like, I don't even want to touch that one, but that's interesting. And a fun little, game-changing reveal, perhaps. Did you see the trailer? What did you think?
I did. I love Guardians of the Galaxy trailers. Yeah. I feel like they do trailers really well. They just know how to highlight what makes people excited. But that reveal was just like, what? So I'm really excited for this. I'm also very excited for the soundtrack. But the trailers, just all the trailers look really good. They're still running, like, in my neck of the woods, they're still running that first extended teaser, you know, with, like, the baby Groot, like, don't push the button. Mm-mm. Like, I'm gonna push the button. But like, this new trailer just looks so much fun. Like, so much fun. So I'm down for it.
Same. So continuing on with the movie news now, our next story is... I'm actually just going to do this Logan one first. So Logan, we were talking about that a little bit earlier. If you were hoping for this movie to come out in black and white, which was kind of teased at when they released the first poster for it, then you're in luck, because James Mangold, the director, has actually replied to a tweet saying that he's working on a black and white version of the film. So the movie that's going to come out in cinemas is going to be obviously it's out, you know, it's color, but the black and white version will potentially come out on the DVD. Perhaps it'll be a special edition. Mad Max Fury Road came out in black and white as well, and it's sort of just a nice way of, I mean, even though it's not shot in black and white, there are amazing ways of correcting that to make it more than just adding a black and white filter. Like, it actually looks really, really good, and, you know, it just makes some stuff pop more. I know that that some people are really, really hoping for this when it's comic book movies and stuff. So good news, I guess, if you... although we did have a comment from Ultron saying as if they needed to take any more color out of the X-Men movies. Yeah, okay. Fair enough. But yeah, no, good news. And our final story of the news is Beauty and the Beast, which is coming out really soon. And I think it is March 17th. So it's just in 10 days from when we're recording this show. And it's been a really weird time with this announcement and sort of the quote unquote fallout from all camps. So actually via Attitude, the gay magazine, we learned that Beauty and the Beast was going to feature Disney movie's first quote unquote exclusively gay moment, with adding an openly LGBTQ+ character to its movie, specifically LeFou, played by Josh Gad, who, you know, if you've seen the cartoon version of Beauty and the Beast, you know that he's sort of going after, following Gaston a little bit and sort of being infatuated with him. And the Disney movie, the live-action adaptation, is going to take that one step further and actually explicitly make his feelings clear and give him a moment near the end of the film when he actually tries dancing with a woman and then ends up dancing with a man, and sort of having that. So when they say exclusively gay moment, I guess that's as far as they're going with that. And first of all, what were your sort of initial reactions when you heard about this? Because there's been some interesting...
Yeah, it's kind of hard to separate my reaction from,
I guess that's
like,
true, yeah.
Because I've seen, like, across the board reactions to this from my gay and my straight friends. So it's been a very interesting few days with regards to this. I feel like if this is the first step Disney needs to take to normalize the idea of incorporating gay characters into their slates, then that's fine. If that's what this does, that's fine. It sounds like it's done incredibly tastefully. Everybody that I know who has already seen this movie says that it's not like as big of a deal. Like, there's been so much backlash. There's a whole, like, theater in Alabama who's refusing to play Beauty and the Beast now because, oh my god, gay is like the worst thing imaginable. It's just really stupid. And everybody says that the scene is, like, fine. It's, like, not even that big of a deal. It's not, like, you know, beating you over the head with the idea. But if, like, again, like, if that's what it takes for Disney to, like, incorporate more of this into their films, then that's fine by me, because it's long overdue.
And I think sort of I land the near the same place as you on that, because when we say that this is like a big deal for Disney, like it is. You know, you can't say that this is not a big step for Disney, even though it's just a dance, even though it's LeFou, who arguably, you know, he's at least in league with the villain, and I'm pretty sure that the movie does a lot to sort of make us sympathetic with him, but you might even say, yeah, he's still like the fool character. He's still like sort of a side character. People are like, yeah, but where's our Give Elsa girlfriends, and where's our main, you know, LGBT characters? But then you look at how much outrage this tiny little thing is getting. You know, Alabama, that movie theater doesn't want to show it. Some people are legitimately angry. I think Russia was thinking about banning it too for having explicit gay content. You realize how Hollywood's global market, its relationship with China, like there's so many things that dictate what they can and cannot put in their movies based on if they want them to be successful in China. Russia, like there's a lot of things that they need to take into consideration. Disney has never had an exclusively, quote unquote, exclusively gay moment in any of their movies. They had the background character in Frozen, who had, you know, that one waving from the hot tub. You know, they had the, I can't even think of anything. They had that
allegedly
that
they had
in
the
Nemo,
two moms,
right?
Yeah, in Finding Dory. But like, I didn't even know. I was looking, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, I did
exactly.
not find them.
Exactly.
Like, there was somebody like that brought that up when we were discussing this like internally on Hypeable, and I was like, I don't even think you can count that because I didn't even see it, and I was actively looking because I was excited.
You can't count that.
Yeah.
And this, like, even though, you know, it's so subtle and it's not, and I think sometimes we do get a little bit, because if you look at TV, like TV has a lot of problems, but visibility is not one of them. You know, when it comes to LGBT characters, like yeah, they die, but they're there. In movies, like especially Disney, they're not there. They just don't exist. So having something like this, to us, it seems like such small. It seems like, oh, it's not enough, but it's a lot. Like, unfortunately, and I hate saying this, but it is. It's a lot, and it might for some people, it's already too much. And I think, I mean, personally, I see this as you can't jump ahead, because you have to take steps, you know, and saying it's not good enough to me is basically like saying steps don't exist. Like, either it's perfect or it's not good enough. That's the only two options. And I feel like that's sort of a very black and white way of looking at it. And I sort of take a little bit of issue with that, because I think you can have a nuanced opinion. Like, it's okay to feel more than one thing at once about this. And I think at the end of the day, like, you know, it's small, and it frustrates me that this is considered a big deal, but it is. And we have to deal with that reality of that. And I think, I mean, I'm still sort of assuming that we will get like Poe Dameron as an LGBT character. Like, I feel like that's happening. And I think that, you know, the stuff in Rogue One with Chirrut and Baze, who were basically life partners without saying it. Like, to me, that was frustrating, because everyone's treating them like they're LGBT representation. And I'm like, no, they're not. Like, that's basically fan service, because they can put in quote-unquote representation without having to confirm it. This one confirms it. This one takes it to, you know, it admits it. So yes, he is gay. Like, this is a character who is gay in a Disney movie. And I feel like that is a much, much, much bigger step, just because of the fact that they vocalize it. So we'll see what happens with Poe Dameron, if that happens. I feel like it will. And I don't know if they'll vocalize it or if it'll be more like subtle. But no, I mean, I'm just gonna say, I think that this is good. I think that this is a good move, and I'm certainly not gonna add more negativity to it, because I feel like Alabama and Russia do that plenty. So
yeah, I would also
just
add, like, and I know that you'll agree with this too, it's like, it's okay to feel like it's not good enough, because at the end of the day it is. And like, repeatedly reminding yourself and society in a nice way that it's not good enough because it's a first step, that's mm-hmm. really important. But you don't want to be so negative
like
about this
bad
that Disney starts taking a step back. Right. So I think that, like, it's really important to remember that going forward. Same thing with, like, the Oscars. Like, is it amazing that they had six African American, like, or Black actors that were nominated this year at the Academy Awards? Yes. Is it really sad that that is a historic high? Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Do we still need progress? Yes. It's not good enough. Yes. But it's a good start.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's the thing, is that at the end of the day, and I feel like we have this conversation a lot, it's like a work of media takes a step forward, it disappoints, and it gets just slaughtered in a way that media that don't bother to take those steps don't. So what does the studio, what does Disney see? You know, they people are like, include LGBT representation in your movies, and then they do, and then they go online and they see, this is terrible. How dare you, Disney? This is bad. This is why I hate it. And I'm just, I don't know. I feel like it's a criticism is a double-edged sword if you don't sort of remember the reality of what Hollywood is actually doing, you know, trying to work with here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's funny too, because I think a lot, it's like, I feel like my gay friends are either, one, really upset about it because it's not enough for them, or two, thinking like, well, duh, like, I even when I was a kid, I thought that LeFou was gay, you know? I thought he was in a one-sided love affair. So, like, yeah, is it sad that we don't have, like, original LGBTQ plus representation? Yes. Like, is it sad that they have to rely on a crutch like LeFou, who was, like, already created, and just give him a gay background? Yes. Do I feel like they'll do it tastefully? I hope so. But, yeah, it's just, like, at the end of the day, progress is progress. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're just gonna have to ride the wave and just respectfully remind everybody that this is great, but we need more.
Yeah, so basically this is okay, good Disney, now do this.
Now more. now give us this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or Poe Dameron, a boyfriend, like whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah. But so that I guess that brings us to the end of the movie news. So I know you guys probably have a lot of thoughts on this, and we would love to hear them, because again, with this discussion, basically what the point we're trying to make is there's more than one thing going on. You know, you it's okay to have more than one opinion at once, and we just need to stay realistic on it, you know. And I feel like there'll be articles going up on Hypebeable about it too, so you can head over there and check out what some of our other writers feel about it.
Yeah, and I'm sure that we'll have some very interesting opinions. But for now, here's something that we can have more opinions on. Are you ready?
Oh my god, I'm so ready.
We got some crazy, insane, unconfirmed, alleged Gilmore Girls news, you guys. basically, there was a report that came out on TV Line right around, like, basically during the weekend when all the media outlets are asleep and we're all like not really checking things, and all of a sudden this pops up, which gave us a lot of fodder for the beginning of this week. Allegedly, it's Netflix's chief content officer Ted Sarandos reportedly told the UK's Press Association that Netflix is currently in preliminary talks to greenlight a second season of Gilmore Girls: A Year in the Life. Now, this is a really big deal because we had a lot of feelings about Gilmore Girls: A Year in the Life, and if you don't believe us, you can just check back on some of our specials. So this is what he had to say about that. He said, "We hope it happens. We obviously loved the success of the show, and fans loved how well it was done. It delivered what they hoped. The worst thing is to wait a couple of years for your favorite show to come back and for it to disappoint you. But series creator Amy Sherman-Palladino and exec producer Dan Palladino sure delivered, and people were really excited about more. And we have been talking to them about the possibility of that." So it sounds like they're keeping the doors open. This also falls in line with what Amy Sherman-Palladino told TV Line right after the revival premiered. She didn't want to fully commit to more Year in the Life, but she did say that she, quote, doesn't rule anything out in her life, but she is very busy starting to make way on a new Amazon pilot called The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is set to drop actually later this month. So if you're looking for more Palladino stuff to sink your teeth into, you might want to head over to Amazon and see what that's all about. But this is kind of, I feel like a lot of Gilmore Girls fans like us, we don't really know what to think about this, because in some ways the revival was lovely and it was great to step back into that world of Stars Hollow. It felt comfortable and it felt right. In a lot of ways, it didn't feel right at all. And And we were left with a lot of questions. So I guess the real question that you have to ask yourself is, do you want more, knowing that perhaps some of the bigger questions you have won't even be answered? Or do you not want anything at all? It's a double-edged sword.
Yes, another double-edged sword. I mean, look, guys, I am the worst person here because I just came to Gilmore Girls. It's not sacred to me like it is to you guys. Of course I want more. What the hell? Like, I need to know. Who's the...
Wait, to spoil it for people who haven't watched. I'm just kidding.
Oh, we should bleep that out. Who's the bleep?
Who's the bleep?
But I mean, look, I need... Yeah, I guess we can include spoilers in the longer discussion. But just to say here, like... Heck yes, I want more, because I feel like the story wasn't done yet. I feel so cheated. And, like, obviously that might be a question of saying, well, I don't want more because she maybe let you down a little bit with the first round. And I totally get that. Like, if you're a fan who's loved the show forever, who was let down by the revival, I totally get why you wouldn't want more. Like, just keep cheapening or, like, putting water in the milk, you know? Like, but I... Yes! I didn't, that wasn't my revival. I feel like I'm still waiting for the final episode.
You know,
like,
what
the hell?
You know what? At the end of the day, you're right. In many ways, the end was just a new beginning. And if you want more of our extended thoughts, we had a lot of them on all four of these episodes, but specifically Fall. It was a monster. Yeah. You know where to find all our Gilmore Girls specials, you guys. If you need more, we got your back. And we'll be back with another Gilmore Girls special, because we can't stay away. So
yes, yeah, even we'll have the bonus audio for this Patreon, and we're doing like a special for all of our feedback, so lots of Gilmore Girls stuff coming your way, I think.
Yeah, we're just trying not to beat you guys over the head with it if, like, you're sick of us. So for those of you that are subscribed to our Patreon, sorry not sorry, but you're getting more Gilmore Girls chatter. And for the rest of you, we will be like we said, we will be putting out a we just got so much feedback after Fall, our Fall special, that we just could not do another special. So that'll be out on the regular feed as soon as we schedule it in. So if you have some last minute thoughts and specifically want to weigh in on this too, send in those emails, because we'll be getting to that at some point soon.
Yes.
Okay, so we have a little bit more TV news here. The Big Bang Theory is set to spin off from itself. There's a prequel in the works, and it's going to be based around a young Sheldon Cooper, and they've actually cast the young Sheldon Cooper. 9-year-old Ian Armitage is going to take on the role, so that's kind of exciting.
Did we know this was happening?
I knew it was happening.
Everyone's like, what
I don't
the hell?
Know. I knew it was happening because I reported about it on the other site I write for. I don't know if Hypeable reported on it, but it's been in the works for a couple of months at least. It's been on my radar for a couple of months. So
Sheldon is a 9-year-old actor, so he's not going to be the lead, right?
I don't think so. So here's what the spinoff is going to be about. Reportedly, it's set during Sheldon's quirky childhood as a scientific genius in the devout and in the devout heart of Texas. So he's living in the South and doing his thing. The Big Bang Theory showrunner Steve Molaro and creator Chuck Lorre are coming back for executive producers, and Jim Parsons is also going to be an executive producer. So that's kind of interesting. He's not really going to be featured in this because obviously he plays. The version of Sheldon we know now, but he will be serving as executive producer, which makes sense because after, you know, like 11, 12 seasons of playing this character, he probably knows Sheldon better than most people. Currently, if you want to take a look at like what Ian Armitage's acting looks like, he's actually starring on Big Little Lies and he's playing the son of Shailene Woodley. So that's kind of fun. And he's just adorable. So if you want to see a cute little video of him in action, you can head over to Hypeable.com where we have this story written up. And I think that this might be fun. I honestly don't keep up with Big Bang Theory enough to really have like a firm opinion on this, but I really enjoyed the first few seasons of the show, which I did watch religiously, and I think this has the potential to be really cute.
Sure. I'm really not a fan of Big Bang Theory, so maybe that's why I didn't know about this. But, we'll see.
Maybe. All right. So we have wrapped up with our TV news for the week. We have a little bit of music news to close out the episode. First up, exciting news for Darren Criss fans, because he is officially teaming up with his brother Chuck, who some of you might be familiar with thanks to his indie band Freelance Whales, and they're actually forming a super awesome, adorable brother band together called Computer Games. And if you want to check out the really adorable announcement video for this project of theirs, you can head over to hypeable.com, where we have embedded an Instagram post from Darren's Instagram announcing this fun new project. Earlier this today, actually, I think I saw on Twitter about less than 24 hours ago, they actually used the app Musical.ly to tease the first single for the album that's coming out. They're actually dropping the album on March 8th, so you won't have to wait long to get your hands on tunes from the Criss siblings. And it's really, really fun. It's kind of got like an 80s pop vibe going on to it. And if that's indicative of what the rest of the album is going to sound like, it sounds like it's going to be a really fun time. They've collaborated before a couple of times. Team StarKid fans will probably specifically remember that Chuck Criss actually did some stuff for StarKid's Little White Lie web series, and he and Darren are like very musically rounded, and they play a bunch of different instruments and stuff like that. And I always kind of feel like siblings that collab together to make music, because they've kind of been like singing together their whole lives, even if they've not been like putting it out for the masses to it's always like a recipe for awesome, because they know each other so well, and like they know the cues, and they've just been like practicing with each other forever, basically. So like I said, the first little snippet that we got of their first single seems really, really fun, and I'm into this. I'm excited to see what the rest of the album sounds like, and you can check that out on March 8th, so it's coming soon.
Cool. I like Darren Criss. I'm excited for this.
Yeah, I think it's really fun to see him kind of getting back into music. He hasn't really done anything since 2013 when he went on tour, so it's definitely exciting for fans of his that are kind of hoping to see him hit the road again.
I haven't been following his career as closely as I know other people have, but I mean, I love his original stuff. I love his creativity. I love him sort of being, I feel like I can't make the comparison that I wanted to make. I'm sure you guys can figure out. It starts with Lin and ends with Manuel Miranda. That's not the comparison I wanted to make, but I feel like there's something so playful and open and wonderful about Darren Criss's creative pursuits in terms of music and musicals and stuff like that, and not just the Harry Potter musical, but just the different stuff that he's done. And of course, like having him in Glee and having him be sort of a little bit more mainstream has really propelled his career forward. But I love just him sort of quote unquote getting back to his roots with this and being able to define his own sound and write his own lyrics and all that stuff. Like I'm really into it. I'm really excited.
Yeah, it should be really fun. So we have one more piece of music news for you guys. Lorde is also back with a new single, and arguably better than ever. She's kind of been away writing for a bit as well. We got a few Lorde tracks over the years since, I think 2013 was when she released her last album. So, of course, she did Yellow Flicker Beat for the Hunger Games soundtrack, and she also had a song with Disclosure, which was amazing. It came out a few summers ago. Now she's back with her first solo single for her sophomore album, which is highly anticipated. Green Light is the name of the song, and before the song was released, just in time for new Music Friday last week, she said that it was going to be funny and sad and joyous, and that it would make us dance. And she definitely delivered on that. The chorus to this specifically is incredibly catchy. If you haven't listened to the song yet, you can head over to hypeable.com to check out the official music video for that, which is embedded into the post for this song. And she also gave an interview with Beats One on Thursday, saying that she wrote the song about her first major heartbreak. And she also said, it's not something I'm really used to writing about. It took me a while to be able to figure out how to write about that. She actually collabed a lot as well on this song and also on her forthcoming album, Melodrama, with Bleachers and Fun member Jack Antonoff, who is just, He's a really great musician in his own right. He's also done some work with a bunch of different artists, including Taylor Swift for 1989. You can specifically hear a lot of his influence on the track I Wish You Would Come Back, and you can definitely hear his influence in Green Light. And I feel like it's so funny because I knew that they were friends, but I never would have thought that like 2013 Lord Sound and Jack Antonoff's penchant for just like his brand of pop music would mix very well, but they're kind of like a match made in music heaven, in my opinion. And I'm really excited to see what else they did together with regards to her forthcoming album, Melodrama. It should be really fun to see how she's grown as an artist. I think lyrically, she's already shown that she's matured, which is amazing considering that she was already really talented at doing that. And it's going to be really fun to kind of see this new side of her when the album eventually gets released later this year.
Cool. Awesome. So moving into TV show of the week. Wait, you didn't watch the Legends of Tomorrow's King Arthur episode, Pam?
No, I've been busy trying to watch the 100.
Okay, well, 100. That's fair. Yeah. That is fair. The next one in the 100, yeah.
I know we got recommended this.
Yes, we did. So Pam hasn't watched anything but the 100, which I totally accept. That excuse, but still, I have two things this week. First of all, we were recommended to watch Legends of Tomorrow's King Arthur episode, which aired like a couple of weeks ago now. So I don't know. Can I vaguely spoil you? Are you actually going to watch it, or
I will at some point, but I'll probably forget. So go ahead.
Okay. So basically, the reason that people wanted us to talk about this was because this Legends of Tomorrow, don't get too excited, but this Legends of Tomorrow episode that takes them back to the court of King Arthur actually makes Merthyr quote unquote canon, which is exciting.
What? But disappointing because I feel like they just stole it.
Well, no. Also, Merlin is a girl.
Oh,
I feel like that's such a cheat. So I was like, at one point, like really, really excited. And then I was like, well, if they have to make her a girl.
You know what? The sad part is they probably thought they were being so revolutionary because they made Merlin a powerful female. But it just disappoints the rest of us.
Think of
those
shippers.
Nothing better to do with our lives. Than dwell on the fact that Merthyr was never canon after
hashtag
that last
not
episode.
My Merlin, indeed. Not my Merthyr.
It's Merlina.
Yeah, Merla. Yeah. But no, I mean, to be fair, it's really cool that she was like a badass woman and she was like hiding out in history. And she was, and it wasn't like super canon. Like Guinevere was like, well, she had a thing with Sarah Lance. Lancelot, Lance, that was cool. I liked that. That was good. But the Merthyr of it all, I have to say, guys, I don't know. It's just not the same. You know, it's not our Merlin. It's not our Arthur. It wasn't, you know, how we dreamed. But no, I mean, it's fun. It's always fun to sort of, because you guys know, listening to the show, that me and Pam are like still obsessed with Merlin after all this time, always. And so I know why you wanted us to watch this episode. And yes, I guess, you know, Merthyr. They weren't even, as I said, they weren't even like really canon, but she was like in love with him. And that was like made canon. So I guess Merlin will always be in love with Arthur. Like they could never get away from that. But yeah. But the episode itself was good, though. I will say, like, Legends of Tomorrow is crazy. And I love it. And I should catch up with it, really, because it's a very different show from The 100 and from other stuff that I watch. It's just, it doesn't take itself seriously at all. And I remember when I watched season one, that like really annoyed me because it was time travel and they just didn't care. But now I get it. I get what they're trying to do and I'm really into it. It's a lot of fun. And the second the second thing I wanted to talk about is totally different, and it is Black Mirror. Because when I'm a huge fan of Black Mirror, and when they announced the Netflix episodes, I was super excited. But then it just became like a you know how like you want to watch something and then you're really sort of, oh, I have to be in the right mindset. I have to be ready for it. And it's like Black Mirror episodes are like insular experiences and they're kind of like little movies. So it's always really hard for me to find the time and find the sort of the mindset to watch it. But I finally, after like months, the first episode of the revival, which is or the new season, which is Nosedive, which is the one that stars Bryce Dallas Howard. as this woman who's just obsessed with being liked on social media and just goes to these extreme lengths to climb up the social ranking, and then she begins to fall out of it, and you just see how quickly, even though it is like a future, because that's what Black Mirror does, it reflects real life and these extreme situations, like all the best sci-fi, and the way that how quickly her popularity plummets after she makes like one mistake and how that makes everyone else view her. And you can sort of hold that up to like how easy it is for someone to get like persecuted on social media these days, like if they're sort of hung out, like people decide to make an example out of them to like prove their point. That happens so much in social media, and you always think, or I always think about those poor people who like say one thing or like use a word they didn't mean to use, or like get misunderstood or express a sentiment that like that gets picked up by, you know, like it always happens, and then they're just like everything they are is just being written off as being like the devil. And it really scares me, and it really sort of, it's a hard thing to watch happen to society through social media, and this catches it so perfectly, and it made me super uncomfortable, and I loved it, and it was amazing, and I can't wait to watch more. And yeah, that's it. Pam doesn't have any TV show of the week, so we are moving swiftly along to listener feedback, and we're gonna start with our Patreon suggested topic, which comes from Sarah Venz. Do you wanna tackle that one?
Sure. Sarah says, what's the first major/most exciting thing you ever got to do for Hypeable or another entertainment source you ever got to do? How did you feel and prepare for it? I should have probably put this into context. Basically, if you guys don't remember, because Patreon is fairly new for us, every week we offer our patrons, I think it's people that pledge $3 or more, have the option to submit a topic for discussion or just kind of weigh in on how they've been hyping or the TV shows they've been watching, or submit a question like Sarah's, and we've vowed to discuss it on the show. So that's what we're going to do right now. Does anything come to mind? I feel like I've been writing for Hypeable for so long that I I can't remember what my first thing was. I also kind of feel like I need to talk about something exciting because, you know.
I have something. Oh, you cool. can think meanwhile. Mine, and I actually, this is a very clear, distinct memory. I started writing for Hypeable when I was, or I had, trying to get the timeline of this right. I think I started writing for Hypeable in 2011. It's a long time ago, guys. And then I went to uni in Cardiff in 2012. And then, like, so while I was still fairly new, while Hypeable was still a fairly new site, and we were still sort of, Andrew's main connections were Harry Potter related, and we didn't have a lot of writers yet, because I was one of the first who were brought on. So because I was in Cardiff, and because of how it worked out, I actually got to attend the opening of the Harry Potter studio tour in London, which was the first ever big thing that I had ever done, like event. I had done a couple of interviews, nothing major at all, and I think I'd done like one or two phone interviews, but it was like we barely started doing podcasts, barely started doing anything, and I was sent off, and I got to bring one of my classmates who was really into photography, so she got to come along as like my official photographer, which was really helpful and nice to have someone there. So I wasn't completely alone, but it was actually, I went a couple of times. So first I went with someone else from Hypeable, Harry. God, I had to like search back. Yeah, Harry, who was working for the site at the time, and we went together. It was the first time we'd met. It was really weird. I hate meeting people in that context, but it was fun and he was super nice. So it was fine. And we had a tour. We got to walk around in it and see it before it opened. And we got to just you know, experience it all. We were both huge Harry Potter fans. That was an amazing experience. And then I went for roundtable interviews with David Heyman and David Yates and, you know, costume designers and just different people involved. And I met Melissa from the Leaky Cauldron, and who does LeakyCon and stuff. And she was just super nice. And she was like, I think she sensed my, like, innocent little deer caught in the headlights look of me never having done it before and being terrified. So she kind of like helped me around and helped me figure out what to do. She's super, super nice. I love Melissa. She's great. And then, you know, we got to attend the red carpet too. So me and Gwen, who was my friend, we got to interview. That was when I interviewed Rupert Grint and Tom Felton and Bonnie Wright and Natalia Tena and Warwick Davis and just all these like huge people. Like, this was my first ever event, and it was, you know, Harry Potter was my main fandom, so it was pretty much like all of the people that I had ever most wanted to talk to, barring Joss Whedon and J.K. Rowling, who wasn't there. Neither of them were there, believe it or not. And it was such an overwhelming, just cool experience. And yeah, and it's all been downhill from there. No kidding. But this was really, really, really cool. And I was completely just thrown into it head first, and I floundered a little bit, but I did well, and I got some cool video, and like, there was Hypeable doesn't do a lot of video content, but we got that, and cool pictures and awesome experience, and I figured if I can do that, then I can do anything.
That's amazing. I was trying to, while you're talking, also just like look back at like everything I've done for Hypeable in the archives, and it just would take too long. But I will say that, like, when I started on Hypeable, Andrew and I go way back. I used to work with him on a website called Twilight Source. So I, my first actually major red carpet was for Breaking Dawn Part 2, and it was in San Francisco. They were doing a, a soundtrack listening party type thing, but not really. And there were some of the artists from the soundtrack were there. I remember, like, specifically Aqualung was there. And that was really exciting for me, because at the time I was a very big fan of Aqualung. I still feel like, his album from a couple years back is like one of the best Rainy Day albums ever. That was really interesting, because it was the first time I had ever kind of done what I always kind of was hoping to do with entertainment news, which was like do like a bigger red carpet, a bigger junket and stuff like that. And it's all kind of spiraled downhill from there in like the best way possible. But I think that like the first, like, I think like my first major big thing that I ever did for like another news outlet was when I was interning out in LA. And I was at Entertainment Weekly. I was interning with them around like 2013, 2014. And there, like in LA, like there is always something happening. So like junkets, things like that, like not like a big deal, but like it's kind of like mainstream. But I remember just being particularly like overcome with emotion kind of when they asked me to help cover the Grammys in 2014, because I had been writing about music for so long. So when I started on Hypeable, I started writing about music. I was doing a column called Band of the Week, and you know, covered things like the Lumineers and Imagine Dragons before they hit the astronomical success they have today. So I kind of feel like between that and like interning with Billboard and stuff like that, like it was all accumulating to this moment at the Grammys. And I think it was like one of the, like, you know, sometimes you have moments in your career if you're doing journalism where you kind of feel like this is the moment, like this is one of those moments that I'll remember forever, because it's such like a personal accomplishment. And I feel like that's what that was for me. Mm-hmm. Just kind of sitting in the press room at the Grammys with all of these other amazing reporters from like the Rolling Stone and Variety and stuff like that, that I just admire so much as like musical feature writers and stuff. And just to see artists like Dave Grohl and Paul McCartney and a very young Casey Musgraves and and Malcolm Moore, Mariah Lewis and stuff like that. Like, it was just so amazing to have the opportunity to be a part of that and to report from there specifically. And it was one of the longest, like most stressful, hardest days of my life. The Grammys is like every year it happens in LA at the Staples Center, and they lock it down. Like security that you wouldn't even dream of happens at the Grammys. You actually have to get to the place, even though like none of it really starts until about 2 in the afternoon. You have to get there by 11 because they start shutting down streets and they like check for bombs in cars and things like that. It's really kind of intense. And I was there from like 11 to about like 10 at night. So it was a really long day, and it was like a fast turnaround, but like everything I love about journalism, just like thinking on your toes, not knowing who the next person that's going to pop through that door is going to be, paying attention to what's going on, you know, on the actual stage versus like who's coming up next, and thinking of questions like on the spot and stuff like that. Mm. It just kind of like was the ultimate test of everything I had learned up until that point. And it's like one of my fondest memories for sure.
That's awesome. Out
of like all of like the awkward encounters I have, I think I have to go with that one just because it was like, it meant so much to me personally.
And so. I think, you know, it's funny too, because I mean, obviously we are, Hypebol is, surprise, it's online. I know you guys are like shocked right now. It's an online thing, and we are, I mean, I'm obviously a little bit more remote than Pam is, but I mean, I rarely get to do things in person because, first of all, I'm here, and the one time I tried at Copenhagen Comic Con didn't go so well, so maybe this is for the best, but I mean, you know, it's really special whenever we do get to attend things. And I feel like it just, it's easy to, it's not easy, but you know what I mean? Like it's, you write opinion articles and you do interviews over the phone or via email, and you make up this, you do a lot to establish connections, and you do a lot to sort of make your voice a voice that is, you know, that there's a reason for people to care about what you have to say. Like, there's, everyone has something to say. Like, why do you, what do you think you come here and think your opinion matters? And then when you go in person and when you interact with people face to face and when you get to cover these live events, that's when I really feel like I'm a part of it. You know, like, that's when I feel like I'm not just like on the outside looking in. And it's also when I feel like a lot of the, because there's online, there's a million voices just clamoring for attention all the time. But when you're face to face with someone, or when you're in a crowd of an event, or if you're attending something, or you're covering something on the spot, like it's just so much different, because you are there and they are there, and you're both doing a job, and you want to do a good job, both of you, and you can look each other in the eye. And I feel like that's when that's when it really feels like what we do is worthwhile. And I wish I could get to do it more, because and you know, obviously there's a lot of opportunities even for Hypebol in LA or New York, and I'm always looking at them like, oh man, like, yeah. If I could go, it'd be so
honestly
good.
Like we don't even, like, Hypebol doesn't even cover half of the things that we get invited to, because there's not enough bodies ever. We would really all have to, like, Hypebol is everybody's like passion project, but it's also all of our side hustles, like, which is why, you know, it kind of comes back to the idea of patrons, like freeing up excess time so that we can bring you guys more of what you guys want to hear and what we want to do for you guys and stuff like that. But I think, like, Selena will agree too, is like, just like cutting through the noise, like, honestly, like, the, like, all of the glitz and glam of Hollywood, like, it is, like, it's impressive to, like, the outsider who, like, you know, doesn't experience it. I make it a point to never feel jaded about anything. Like, I try and always be excited and, like, live in the moment, regardless of if I'm, like, interviewing somebody that's up and coming or, like, one of the biggest people in their field. But it like, nothing ever feels better, like, than knowing, like, you know, somebody's read your work. Like, we've had a couple of showrunners that have said, like, oh, I've read what you've done. Thank you so much for, like, covering this or that. I really liked what you did about that. Or, like, for me, like, my, like, the biggest compliment any, like, person that I'm interviewing can ever give to me is, like, to pause and go, huh, that's a good question. And, like, I will always welcome that thoughtful silence over anything else. And, like, and I like, well, even, like, if I'm editing it for the show here or something like that, I'll always leave it in, because I feel like it adds, like, to the organic feeling of, of just, like...
And then people know that you impress them.
No, I mean, like, no, I don't think anybody cares, but it's just, like, because at the end of the day, like, we all try and be original, but you also have to be realistic about the fact that, like, your question is probably not as original as you thought.
So if you can
come at it from, like, a different way, it's, like, it's kind of like a game I play with myself, honestly. It's, like, how can I ask this in a way that they've never been asked before that might incite a thoughtful response that has not been heard? And, like...
Absolutely.
And that's, like, the biggest compliment. And then, like, coupled with, like, you know, anybody that's a part of the fandom you're reporting for saying, like, oh, thanks for asking about this and stuff like that. Like, to me, like, those those are the highlights above anything else.
Right.
Also, just connecting with the fan base and stuff. So
yeah. So we're like, I just saw how long we're running, so we should probably move on. But I just want to add one last thing, is that it's also super fun for me to meet other journalists. I was going to say, because online, again, you know, it is kind of like a, they ignore you on Twitter, or they reply to you on Twitter. Like, you don't even know you have, you're all covering the same thing. But then I feel like when you meet them in person is when you really figure out like which ones you connect with and which ones you don't. And sometimes it's like surprising. I find, because it's, I've been really lucky. Like, I've had really good, I meet other journalists from like similar outlets to mine, and we just click and we just have such a good time. And then others, like, you're like, hello, I've seen your blah blah blah, and they're like, hello. It's a really weird, like, either people are really friendly and open, or it's like really they're in a competition with you that you have no interest in being in. So that can lead to some fun experiences I'm not going to share here, but no, I mean, most people are really nice.
We all have that one person.
We do, yeah. But we've, you know, I've been really, really lucky. And I think just because I don't get to do a lot, I'm always like the newbie at whatever I do. So people just generally just take pity on me, and they're like, yes, I will help you. Come over. Like Melissa, who is like the nicest person, and who is like, yes, come on. Let me guide you through this, my Padawan.
So, that's cute.
Yeah. So anyway, we have some other listener feedback that we want to get through real quickly. We have some tweets. That's just, if you could take Emmy's, then we can just switch.
Yeah, sure. Emmy says, have you watched One Day at a Time on Netflix? It's as if Jane the Virgin and Fuller House had a baby. It's all family comedy with all the diversity. We have not, but I'm going to check this out, Emmy.
I would not have guessed that from the image, because it looks just like Fuller House. And I'm just like, oh, that looks so boring. So I always skip past it. But I'll give it a chance. Yeah. Kelsey Pais says, lol, this was still in my calendar, hashtag rip Allegiant. And it was a picture of the Allegiant Part 2 premiere in her calendar on March 24th.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay. Callie J. Cox says, TBH, Pamela referring to her life as a rom-com without a male lead on Hype is one of the most relatable things I've ever heard. Hi, 10. Thanks, Kelly. I feel like I feel better about my life now.
Who's that girl? That
I'm relatable.
It's Pam. Yeah. That's awesome. And Alejandra Claro says, Planet Earth 2, Lizards versus Snakes. No TV show / movie has ever made me so anxious as this. It's one of the best things I've watched. And Ellie Arnott actually also talks about Planet Earth. I guess this was in response to something.
Yeah, it was a response to me freaking out about Lizards versus Snakes. This was the episode you weren't on. But yes, I love that you guys are on my level. It's still, I'm still thinking about it, you guys.
It's hilarious. I watched some of Planet Earth. It's really nice. I watched it when I was cooking, and it was like extremely just mesmerizing.
Yeah, I watched it when I wasn't sick. I got like really bad motion sickness when I was flying back from Hawaii, but I watched the first episode, the Islands one, and it was amazing.
Cool.
I enjoyed.
Yeah. Cool. So that's all the feedback that we had this week, and we hope that you enjoyed this episode of the podcast. If you want to talk about, or if you want to respond to anything we talked about, you can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Twitter @hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can find us on, hold on.
Are they coming to get you?
They are. They are.
Run away, Selena.
Wait,
run away.
We have one more topic for you to talk about.
Yeah, don't arrest her yet, you guys.
And you can check out our Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast. And if you want to hear me and Pam talk a little bit more about the potential Gilmore Girls revival and what that might mean and what we might want for it, head over to Patreon and become a pledge with us for like $2 or more, and you can listen and download that bonus audio segment. We have our The 100 season 3 discussion coming later this week at last. And I think that's everything. We'll let you guys know about what else we've got cooking, and we'll let you guys know what when and where to vote for which movie we're gonna do the DVD commentary for. So it should be a lot of fun. Thanks for listening. Until next time, my name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.